Straw Man, The Real Story of Your Artificial Person, A Private Work by Clint, read for you by Josie. Chapter 1, Part 5.
Perhaps these words, God and Jesus Christ, are beginning to feel a lot more important than we gave it false credit for, between football games and reruns of American Idol, and sometimes on holiday Sundays, legally cursed holy days. For the only true and natural freedom under God can only come when we individually decide to have no other gods, lords, before the God of nature, to hold no lies as higher than that holy host of what is the only truth of existence. That includes the God of Mammon and its tool of currency. Think about that for a moment, and don't be shocked by the absolute self-evidence of this statement. Live a lie or face reality. For this is the only true, religious, spiritual life that can be led, and is the only one exemplified by Christ, that we live charitably and at all times in self-existent truth. But the legal gods have other designs, following the lines of their god fathers, though we are not to call any man as father, and appointing themselves to the highest commercialism and judgment. Peerage. The rank or dignity of a peer or nobleman. Also, the body of nobles taken collectively. Black's Law, 4th edition. Peers. In feudal law, the vassals of a lord who sat in his court as judges of their co-vassals and were called peers, as being each other's equals or of the same condition. The nobility of Great Britain, being the lords temporal, having seats in Parliament, and including dukes, marquises, earls, viscounts, and barons. Equals. Those who are a man's equals in rank and station. Thus, trial by a jury of his peers means trial by a jury of citizens. For judgment of his peers, see judgment. Black's Law, 4th edition. Peers of fees. Vassals or tenants of the same lord, who were obliged to serve and attend him in his courts, being equal in function. These were termed peers of fees, because holding fees of the lord, or because their business in court was to sit and judge, under their lords, of disputes arising upon fees. But if there were too many in one lordship, the lord usually chose 12, who had the title of peers, by way of distinction. Whence, it is said, we derive our common juries and other peers. Black's Law, 4th edition. These are only the legal gods appointed by other legal gods to judge the legal slaves that worship them in legal name and title. It is merely an imaginary class structure, the several levels of lordship, godhood, and at the highest levels of government, in the legislature, the senators and house members are their own peers, their official actions subject only to their own ethics committees, upon which they themselves preside, continuously pardoning their own collective and individually organized crimes. Quote, shall in all cases, except treason, felony, and breach of the peace, be privileged from arrest during their attendance at the session of their respective houses, and in going to and from the same, and for any speech or debate in either house, they shall not be questioned in any other place. End quote. U.S. Constitution, Article 1, Section 6, Clause 1. It is very important to note here that this notion of legal, unnatural, anti-God equality is what allows all men in public persona to be judged by all other men in legal persona, acting in juries and as administrative judges at bar. Equality is just another patriotic lie used to cause all men to never be spiritually considered. Only the fiction, the equal legal person, status, is considered. The man follows suit in surety. All straw men are equal in the eyes of the fictional administrative law system, and without the straw man, bond and surety, the man cannot be considered at all. No man should seek to be bound in legal, forced equality with all others. This is just slavery by another name, for only slaves would seek such a status under a master. Here we can see that even gods may be ruled over by other gods. These barons, or landlords, are only appointed gods to judge in peerage by a higher god, a higher authority, as the majesty of a king or queen, which is again merely a higher form of fictional godhood. All legal titles impose upon the holder a sort of godship, a vessel, and the power of that ship, as with a citizenship, only exists over those fictional names and titles of artificial persons, places, and things placed under its jurisdiction by another god in its peerage. Even our modern juries are appointed to be temporary gods over other equal citizenships, vessels, acting under the jurisdiction of their lord, judge. Though spiritually none of them should be casting stones in judgment, for none of us stand in innocence. Notice above that a peer is an equal, just as citizens of the United States are in peerage with each other under the equal protection of the law, equal slaves. But notice also that this equality is only applied to those peers by their appointed rank and station, false persona, in political, artificial society. It is very important to know here that it is not any living man that is being considered as equal by these creator gods and lords of the legal law, only a fictionally registered and assigned persona, status, in legal society, which is a fictionally named legal place, jurisdiction. These surnames are equal, the titles are not. No title is bestowed to any man, only to his fictional persona. And so, a Muslim in citizenship is equal to a Christian in citizenship, and both are equal to an atheist in citizenship. Why is this? As we will see, legal citizenship to the fiction, to that legal government which is opposed to God and nature, regards every public citizenship in abandonment of God, as having no religious tendencies or higher moral law, and as having no private religion. For his God is the legal state, and he worships only publicly in mammon and in false persona of the state, valuing everything he senses only in the artificial estimation, judgment, and valuation of money, even including his own self, his labor, and so too his children. Belief in, love of, money is certainly the root of all evil. For evil is only ever that which is artificial. Money is only a representation of debt, a promise to pay passed from hand to hand, and only debtors in surety bond worship it, believe in it, and therefore publicly use it. To be clear, titles don't exist in nature, meaning they are not a creation of the supreme being we call God, as the creator of all nature in the universe, and are instead only legal creations of these legal gods. Man is not born in nature with a name or a title or a number or mark. There is no actual equality in nature, and the sexes, for instance, are certainly not in any way equal in their abilities and weaknesses. Equality is not a right in reality. It is the voluntary and highest duty of all men to treat each other as such. The male has not the equal ability to bear children as the female, and so this notion of equality can and only ever is political, artificial status of man's law. And as we will uncover, equality is one of the worst aspects of citizenship, for even slaves are considered as equal in their very limited rights. Legal words are generally opposed to their general and spiritual meaning as terms of art, and so equality under man's law is merely a form of building a lower class structure than the false creator gods of that legal equality. These artificial things, such as legal rights and duties, are only ever the creation of man. They are not of nature. They do not grow on trees. They do not just spontaneously happen. It is this distinction between the supreme being which we call God and its realm of nature, as compared to the false supremacy of these legal gods by respect and consent of men, that we must always consider. For again, the law we voluntarily follow expresses the God we have chosen. A man has but two states of being. One is a man under God, and one is that same man acting in fictional persona under the legal gods. This is the scriptural choice between God and the god of mammon. The gods of money are the gods of nations, for all internationally considered forms of money are national in their origins. And so, the gods of the nations, of the national currency and commerce, are always only idols. And so the persons of men, as artificial creations of these idols, can only ever be considered as recreated false images when compared to man's origin and source in nature, as the creation of that supreme God, the creator of all nature, and more importantly, of man. It is the use by man and his adultery, false persona, of these legal gods, currencies, and credit, as the creation and property of the nation, which is legally called as commerce, that allows the creator of that money to be as gods over us. The user of another's property is only ever the subject of its actual owner. The user of another's names, status, and titles is only ever the subject of their creator. And every creation has a god, creator. An agent only ever exists to serve its principal, a servant, its master. Man's use of only God's creation of nature makes man a subject only of God, and thus only of the natural unwritten law. It is only the contracted use and dis-ease of this artificial legal persons, places, and things by their authoritative legal names that man becomes the bonded subject of these idols of the nations, those recreators as the gods of their own fiction and artifice. Quote, "Thou shalt make no covenant with them, nor with their gods. They shall not dwell in thy land, lest they make thee sin against me. For if thou serve their gods, it will surely be as a snare unto thee." End quote. Exodus chapter 23, verses 32 to 33, King James Bible. These words have very distinct meanings, which will be further revealed as we proceed. But the message here, and our entrained ignorance of it, is quite clear. For we have made covenant, contract, with them, and their gods, through their word trickery, even as we stand in surety to their snare, person, status. And this is a great example of so many verses that fall upon ears that cannot hear and eyes that cannot see. For when the words are understood in their original intention, this verse carries a much deeper meaning. When we read them with an open mind and seek their true meaning and intent, we find that we must condemn our own ego before we may see that our love, belief, of the legal identity and status it provides is the barrier to knowledge. For if we try to justify our legal, fictional personhood and its system of anti-God law, while at the same time claiming our Christhood and its law as the Word, Son of God, we must necessarily experience the full effect of cognitive dissonance. We simply cannot have, in reality, two masters, two gods, because we cannot have and uphold at the same time two opposing laws. Here, in this scriptural declaration, we find the very essence of our own collective hell. The entire purpose of the existence in the United States and its corporate franchise of national citizenship is to serve the gods, creators, of that nation. It is a commercial, dead existence only, performed in the name of another that is and can only be opposed to the supremacy of Jehovah. For a citizenship carries with it a legal covenant, of not of the grace of God, de gratia, but in the service and subjection of that which is opposed to God, de facto. It is to be in surety to a fictional person, to be snared by man's legal code. To be opposed to God means here to stand in opposition to the protective law of and over all of nature. For the law of man is only the law of his contracts, covenants, and the false law can only be applied through false legal testament. In all the fables ever told, the devil may only ever retain power over each individual man by his consent to that devil's contract, to its series of words. In law, a devil is defined as a man that is an evil genius, species. And not surprisingly, junior attorneys are often also called as devils, under the tutelage of devil masters at bar. This is no joke, and as we will uncover, the terms devil and devil master are actually the flattering titles officially given by the Scottish Parliament to its resident attorneys. And of course, devil's advocate, as an attorney, is certainly a commonplace term. But don't you go judging anyone just yet, for we must also realize that we too are acting as devil's advocates, as the agents, attorneys, over fictional persons, and as puppet masters of the state's puppets. We are not acting as our true selves either. Judge not, want not. For any man to reign over another man by fictional name and title, one man must use the property, name and title, of the other, which is a tacit or express agreement to abide by the law of the other. The contract is the devil's only actual tool, its only tie that may bind man's voluntary choice and make him sure, in surety, to support and operate in the legal matrix code of this big legal lie. The renter is always the subject of he who owns perfect title to that which is rented. A public person is incapable of perfection, and so the man who falls into that snare of a fiction of law, a person, must obey the law of his master, owner, even if that law is against God's law, as the law of nature. It is no longer a choice. The impersonation of a godless character in fiction takes choice away, for the man must follow the strict fictional law, contract, of they that own that fictional character. The problem is that our entire culture has been repurposed so as to perpetrate this fraud of commercial citizenship in mammon. This is accomplished especially through legal marriage and birth certification, so that what is the worst, lowest possible status above that of involuntary slavery is applied to every man through what appears to him as that which is absolutely normal custom in society. And because we are assured scripturally that all the gods of nations are only ever idols, man can only ever stand in idolatry under any national citizenship. No exceptions. The legal entrapment has one and only one distinct purpose, to cause man into an alienation of his inalienable, sellable rights, so that his family wealth and inheritance can be taken in legal piracy by the law of the sea as treasure found by salvage. This was the master plan. And as strange as that may sound, it is exactly what the legal dictionaries, court records, tell us is happening. So keep reading, for this work is an encyclopedic dictionary exposing that master plan by these legalized pirates in their own words, and we haven't even reached the first chapter. One very clear and agreed-upon foundation must be set here, at the beginning. We must know and understand that without a foundation, without an agreed-upon source, God, Creator, no structure would be able to stand on its own in self-existence, either physically, metaphorically, or as a legal fiction. Only one realm stands in self-evidence and self-existence, and that is the reality of nature, that relies on nothing of man's imaginations or creations to exist. To this natural realm, we attribute the highest word of creation, and the highest authority of law possible, as the natural law. And so, we call this whole conceptualization of what is pure and real in the universe as God, Jehovah. Without this understanding as our highest foundation of law, we may claim nowhere else to go, no way out of fiction, for we have no words to describe reality as Jehovah to those lesser gods that seek to defeat the authority of that natural law of God, which is well accepted to be in all legal systems an uncontrollable, unwritten act of God. In other words, if you are subject under their persona and law, and they very much recognize God's law of nature as highest, then whether you like it or not, you accept this as true. If they consider it their duty to entrap you in legal contract and law because you have fallen and chose to remain fallen from the grace and natural freedom and negative responsibility and duty of God, then you would be quite the dumbass as to claim differently while following their law. This is not merely some foolish religious doctrine. This is the foundation of all systems of law. To ignore this fact is to publicly pronounce what a fool you are, for your denial is literally a curse upon your true self, source, a fortification of the chains that bind you to fiction. To publicly proclaim your non-belief, hate, non-love of God as creator of all life and of all self-existence is to publicly claim that reality does not exist and that fiction overrules the law of nature, Jehovah. And this state of confusion and helplessness is exactly where they wish you to stay, bound by their words of art and worshipping all things unnatural. And so we must here have a meeting of the minds before continuing this work. Without this understanding as the very principle and foundation of all things and of the fiction laws that hold all real and artificial things together, there is no point in your moving forward. And so, whether we believe, love, or don't believe in God and the many forms, images, and anthropomorphic versions that are manifested to us by that multitude of legal and ecclesiastical institutions, books, adversaria, and sacred, cursed sites from all over the earth, we must here understand that the entirety of all law is based in some way on God, either in support of God or as that which is opposed to God. At the heart and foundation of all law and of all things, there sits some version, form, and flavor of what God is. If the acknowledged God is Satan, then that nevertheless means that this God is the foundation of the satanic adversarial law, and thus the structure of that society. But we must remember that Satan only exists as a concept against that which is the reality and nature of God. Without God, Satan would serve no purpose, for Satan is only the adversary of God. No God, no adversary. Darkness needs light to shine so that it may cast its own shadows, especially the light of revelatory knowledge. And so we must know here that whatever is considered as sovereign is merely the God or gods over any legally created law or legal system of men. The gods of nations sit only in idolatry, for nations are only ever the artful creations of man, not of God, not of the true binding source of nature. Be it a king or a specific private people, the sovereignty of any legally created entity, church, or state, is acting as God, landlord, over whatever those men constitute, create as their own realm of fiction. Acceptance of their artificial legal existence is acceptance of their personal godhood. To fear them is to respect them. For example, let us consider every one of the several state constitutions, which are all similarly worded. Every state constitution stems from one and only one source, authority of some name or description of the highest God. This cannot be denied, for it is written plainly and clearly. Every single state constitution begins with a similar religious preamble, such as, "We, the people of New Mexico, grateful to Almighty God for the blessings of liberty, in order to secure the advantages of a state government, do ordain and establish this constitution." From the New Mexico State Constitution. This invocation of God cannot be overlooked as just some flight of fancy or sense of mere romanticism. It is not an invocation of any man's incorporated religions or doctrines, but serves only as an acknowledgement of the source of man and creation of all of nature. This enforcement of God as creator of nature and of man's place, liberty, within it, as well as that higher law standing over all of what we call creation, is a necessary ingredient to any tyranny created by men, those usurpers of God's name for their own adversarial purpose and gain in mammon. For this is the establishment of the highest law, of God, and what follows is the ordination of lower law, of fiction. In other words, by establishing the highest law, those who join such an unholy state, people, and that commercial estate and territory, land, are choosing to abandon that which is stated in the preamble as the highest law of God. These constitutions are God-makers, admissions and publications of sin, abandonments of the highest God and its law of nature. The men claiming sovereignty over all others may only do so by invoking God's name to justify their supposed legal existence and as a secondary creator of art, a legalistic sovereignty. And this is why we are not only instructed but commanded to respect and take no other gods before the one and only God of nature. From Rome to America, this aspect is seen throughout all historical empires, and not ironically, is also seen as the cause and foundation of each empire's devolution into apathy, in its ultimate and cyclic demise, as each state, people, devolves from that pretended, sacred, and aristocratic source and foundation of a higher natural law. Quite simply, man's creation of lower, legalistic law hinges on his ability to convince or fool another into allowing them to play God, and thus to create law over his own legal creation of empire. A master must have his subjects, or his title is meaningless, and his foundation, artful source, will fail. And so we take comfort that no matter what damage man may do to his own realm of nature and placed within it, that foundation of Jehovah, of God's creation and its permanent law, shall never die. Without man, nature will continue and thrive, but without nature, man cannot survive. Thus, the obvious and self-evident law that all men must follow to ensure their survival is the law of nature, the law of creation, which, without hesitation, necessarily condemns all other forms of law and the false gods and flattering title that created them. Here we may see the paradox of a U.S. public citizenship or member of any legal government or nation impossibly claiming as well to be a follower of Christ, the highest law of nature. Christians existing happily in hell, it is a delicious irony, for such false knowledge of gods of fiction can only be attributed to the brainwashing of public education in an absolute obfuscation of the knowledge of the ancient scriptures, the true law. For only the manifestation of Christ, law, in all men may defeat such a devilish deceit, as no other law would be needed or permitted. Here in the United States, we are witnessing a private bloodline of people declaring themselves as a pluralistic Elohim, God, over all public persons, including corporations. And these many gods, called as the several private states, created the God known as we the people. When we, as subjects of this God, the people, receive a summons to appear in an administrative court, it comes from none other than that legally established and ordained God named as the people, as whatever state of the nation is summoning its own property, written as the people of state versus a legal person. And the man, pledge, is acting agent for that public persona, property, must appear as summoned when that straw man is called forth by the God, judge, that is the representative administratorship of the people. Amazingly, this can only mean that we, the common citizenships, are certainly not the people of any private state of the Union. To be able to be summoned by that artificial God is to be owned by that God. And so, unless we can differentiate and mentally separate our true self from these fictional representations of that simulation of self, a legal persona, we cannot even begin to comprehend how or why we have taken an idolatrous God before the supreme God of all nature. The people, a false god, is only administering its own commercial property as its subject, its straw man, as its proprietary legal names and titles. It is the god of Clint Richardson, but not the god of, creator of, me. In this respect, and in order to establish the very foundation of highest sovereign authority of God's natural law above all other potential legal state and church gods and their lesser unnatural laws, even they must have first acknowledged a one true God. This is not a requirement of belief in some represented image or person as God, only an understanding that all law stems from the concept of the ultimate power and authority of God as creator, whether you personally believe in, love God or not. God is the foundational escape route and safe house. Some people call this as getting back to nature. Others call it getting grounded. Some smoke weed and ingest its shrooms. Whatever the name, the result is the same. One's refinding of what is real. The reader may choose to ignore this fact at his own peril, and purposeful ignorance, and even unreasonable hatred of this fact, is a likely sign that the reader will not be able to get anything from this work. For I cannot, nor do I intend to prove to anyone that God exists. The point of God's realm is that everything in it is not provable, for self-existence is self-evident, requiring no fictional proofs of men's imaginations or words. It is difficult, I know, to have such faith, but only until you realize that faith in truth, in reality, and in nature is just another way of stating the words, faith in God. The author is not asking the reader to believe, love, anything that isn't real, only to acknowledge the foundational law of men in their nationhood by their own creations and writings. I ask only that you believe in, love, only reality, which is the meaning of the word Jehovah, which is the highest and only pure use of the word God in the English Bible. In other words, man only obtains power as a false authority by pretending to be middleman gods in the appointed offices of what they define as God, pretendedly and apparently approved and thus seated in office by that supreme being. Thus, we must only know that from the point of view of any legal system of law created by man, that law is only established and ordained over man's own false creation of legal names and titles, nouns, of all things already in existence, of God's creation. Nature, including all men on earth in equal consideration, must first be acknowledged as only the unimpeachable creation of God and no other, with no flattering titles, before a false god pretending to be a deity higher than man but less than Jehovah, and in legal reconsideration of all nature, appoints himself or is anointed, christened, to be sovereign over man's legal creation and law, and those who volunteer to be under its sovereignty. The establishment of the highest God in the mind is the ratification of choice. If the reader has ever quoted the statement that all men are created equal, he has only quoted a part of God's law, plagiarized by an idolatrous nation to justify their tyrannical designs and false law against he who religiously quotes it. These statements are a statement of source, of man's origin and permanent place in God's creation of nature. Man retains this station in God's kingdom at all times, for he can never in truth be anything but what God created him as. Only if he follows by his choice of actions in life that natural law of God, without using man's legal artifices of legal names, titles, credit, insurance, being in surety, can he actually lay claim to be under that highest law of God. For what is nature without a creator? To deny God is to deny reality. Not because God exists in some perceived form or image, but because another name for reality is Jehovah, God. Reality, noun, 1, actual being or existence of anything, truth, fact, in distinction from mere appearance, something intrinsically important, not merely a matter of show, and to realities yield all her shows. In the schools, that may exist of itself, or which has a full and absolute being of itself, and is not considered as a part of anything else. In law, immobility, or the fixed, permanent nature of property, as chattels which savor of the reality. This word is so written in law, for reality. Webster's 1828.
Notice that to a fictional person created as a fiction of law, the only pretended reality is the legal artifice of property. Remember also that property is never that which a public person holds, but only that which he uses under the private holder of that property, including land. In other words, in the legal realm, the only reality is a virtual one, the registered forms of all things without substance. And property is merely a construct of the words of art of that legal system. Property is not real, just as real estate is not a part of reality, Jehovah. A claim on land is not actual land, just a false, flattering title of that real land, creation. And therefore we must know that all wars are not fought over actual land, but over the power to call that land as legally entitled sovereign property. Real men must die, just so that the gods of nations may transfer title and commercially exploit the real land to resource its mineral riches. What could be more opposed to the moral conduct of a people, Church of Christ? What could be further from the truth of what is the natural law? Before continuing upon this journey, let us take into consideration this word truth in its dualistic and opposing forms. What is true under God is that which is self-evident, needing no proof from the designs of men. What is called as the noun or name of truth in the legal system is always a lie, for words and names are always an accepted lie. Truth, like life, is a verb. It is an action. Truth happens as it happens, timelessly and without history. Whatever name, noun, is placed upon truth has nothing to do with its actuality, self-existence, and self-evidence. In fact, a name recreates as a dead instrument the animate substance of life, as the verb of being or action thereof, into an empty form with no self-evidence or self-existence. Art cannot animate itself. In other words, only the name, artfully affixed to something real, may be proven to fictionally exist by artificial law, but never a man or other part of God's creation alone, without name, which we may call ambiguously as nature or as reality. That being said, let us consider what the pure truth is compared to its evil twin, that imagined legal or linguistic truth, made entirely of words with no substance. Quote, I shall then suppose, not that God who is supremely good and the fountain of truth, but some evil genius not less powerful than deceitful, has employed his whole energies in deceiving me. I shall consider that the heavens, the earth, colors, figures, sound, and all other external things are naught but the illusions and dreams of which this genius has availed himself in order to lay traps for my credulity. I shall consider myself as having no hands, no eyes, no flesh, no blood, nor any senses, yet falsely believing myself to possess all these things. I shall remain obstinately attached to this idea, and if by this means it is not in my power to arrive at the knowledge of any truth, I may at least do what is in my power, and with firm purpose, avoid giving credence to any false thing or being imposed upon by this arch deceiver, however powerful and deceptive he may be. End quote. Quote, where could an effect get its reality if not from its cause? If we assume that something is found in the idea that is not in its cause, then the idea gets that something from nothing. End quote. Quote, perhaps several partial causes have taken the ideas of various perfections I attribute to God from a variety of causes, so that all of these perfections are found somewhere in the universe, but not all joined together in a single being, God. On the contrary, the unity, the simplicity, that is, the inseparability of all those features that are in God, is one of the chief perfections that I understand to be in Him. End quote. Descartes, Meditations on First Philosophy, separate quotes. One of Descartes' promises about the human condition was that while man's will is unlimited, and so too therefore is his ability to choose correctly or incorrectly, his reason and perception are in fact quite limited. For of course, man cannot know the completeness of God, the universe, nor comprehend its greatness, but he can certainly create languages and digits that become his own false religions and his sciences, where the symbols overshadow and become more sacred than that singular aspect of the oneness of God, creation, they represent as fiction. Thus, man has been led to worship the effect, but not the cause, source, of the effect. And so we find that man's sacred designs can and only ever will be cursed, adding greatly to his knowledge of the fruit of evil, artifice, without actual knowledge of the real, good, such symbols represent. Even our concepts of good and evil are skewed, mistaking again the actions of a spider as anthropomorphized evil. But the spider is an integral part of nature, not an artificial creation of man. Thus, the spider is not part of that tree of knowledge. For that tree only bears false or incomplete fruit. It bears only the fruit of man's limitation of knowledge and perception. And so we must eat of it without confidence at all times. For all that is sure, truth, and nature, needs not the fruit of man's ideas to justify its self-existence. The effect of the fruit must never overshadow the cause of it, for its power relies on its respected source, and the law that binds it mustn't be confused with the law that fictionalizes it to be something it's not. Descartes reached a final conclusion, which we should all be taking to heart. He realized that because of these limitations upon our perceptions, but not upon our will and desires, we should continuously, consciously assess all that we perceive with our senses. For our limitations cause us to be susceptible to false perceptions, outright inaccuracies, and even well-known lies. Thus our errors in believing, loving, such false perceptions and lies is not God's fault but our own. We cannot use God as an excuse for our own behavior, though many do, for our behavior stems from our own perceptions, be they of falsity or of truth. The Bible was written to rein in such false perceptions, guiding us to embrace only that which is self-evident and self-existent. And so Descartes' final solution was simply to consciously use our faculties correctly, with conscious awareness of our limitations and ability to err, believing, loving, only that which is real, of God. And so the moral of his writings was quite reasonable, putting forward the simple concept that to avoid error, each of us must consciously remain within the limits of what we can be certain about, never assenting to artificial concepts, sciences, and symbology that surpasses the limited powers of our ability to perceive and avoid that for which our reasoning of what is self-evident is unable to confirm. When in doubt, do not believe. Do not fall into false love with what is not real. Funny thing, this is exactly what the Bible teaches. The first step is to admit our own potential for fallibility, sin, love of fictional things. And then only from this point may we find truth, God.
But we must also realize that our belief in the supposed infallibility of the corporate ecclesiastical office of Pope or any other leader is part of our fallibility of perception. It is the belief in, love of, what is not certainly of God's nature. This work is intended to present one and only one thing, the self-evident truth. While the rhetoric of the author may sometimes get in the way of this momentous feat, such blathering is only presented with that same intent of revealing and attempting to acknowledge and live only in the highest truth, as what is indisputable except through lies and deception. This work has no other purpose. We must therefore acknowledge this very important collective condition of our place in the corporate human farm, colony, and under these devils, evil geniuses, that form without substance we all suffer from at some point in our lives, and perhaps on a daily basis. We seem to enjoy or at least tolerate the task of hiding from the truth and making up our own. We like to play make-believe. We pretend. We lie to ourselves and do so quite often, either knowingly or unknowingly. And there is a very good reasoning behind this phenomenon, and not just the fact that everything around us exists as an accepted lie. Often, the purest of truths told by men appear to the hearer as that which is offensive, causing hurt feelings due to the sudden cognition of some very hard realities, truths, without dissonance, which ultimately we all know, in the end, cannot be escaped from. We cannot escape from nature, from Jehovah, from our source in nature, even within these artificial wombs, matrixes, we artfully create and believe in. What is out of harmony with reality will eventually be forced back in tune with it, or shall perish in the wake of that returning. Such artificial growth away from the harmony of God's nature and its law of life is cancerous growth, and cancer is the body's forced evolution as a response to man's scientific designs against it, a desperate attempt to fight our foolish rejections of the perfection of a pure existence and law. The reality of it is self-evident, with every blade of grass and every rainstorm and every starry night. The strange question we must attempt to answer here is this. Why is that which is unchangeable, undeniable, self-evident truth, such a perceptively offensive concept? How can we possibly be offended by the true nature of every aspect of our own existence? But the answer is even stranger, for we must realize that truth in its self-evident substance is in actuality never offensive, and thus always defensive. They say the truth hurts, but in reality, it can only heal. This is to say that the truth can only be offensive to a liar, to anyone that believes they are something they are not. The truth, being self-evident, is God's primary defense against all artifice and against the principality and princes, magistrates, of legal lies. It is the only true defense that exists, for only the truth may defeat lies. And so no matter what is presented herein, the author wishes only for the reader to ask this single question before rendering a fictional opinion based on some personal prejudice and artifice. Is what is written here a self-evident truth, or is it a falsified or opinion of truth based on a legally accepted lie, a lie with no existence in truth, reality? Is it man-made, or is it a creation of God's nature? These are the only states of being when it comes to information. Knowledge is either real or artificial, and we more so than not acknowledge strictly what benefits our individual purpose and intent. Whatever is said herein is in the purest intent of truth. Whatever the reader may extract from these words should be of the same intent, for the truth is only offensive to that which is not real. To defend a state, a nation, a corporation, a religion, a status within any of these, or any other fictional creation of man, is to deny the truth that these things simply do not exist in self-evidence. They are not the creation of God. They did not grow on trees, nor germinate from seed, nor spawn from another life. They are imaginations of the magi in the nations. They are magic spellings of words. They are artificial in every way. And so please consider these differences when suddenly something written in this work apparently offends you. The truth may only offend he who hides behind a lie he calls as truth, but is only the fiction of art, an image with no essence. Whatever painting you have created for your legal self, whatever self-projected image you imagine yourself to be in their legal fiction, none of these are self-evident truths, only names and flattering titles that exist only in fiction, and anything true is always offensive to anything legal and artificial. Does the truth in man's mind and imagination necessarily match or exist what is in being as reality? No, for truth built of words or ideas cannot exist in and of itself. It is never self-evident. Man's accepted truths are only a product of man's imagined perceptions of the already self-existent reality, God. And so any truth created by man must never be said to be a certainty, especially the theories of any science or religion. Numbers are words, and words are always a lie, standing as only a two-dimensional, fictional representation of the infinitely dimensional real they represent. Certainties are neither scientific nor spiritual. The only true and self-evident certainty is that God, reality, exists despite man's opinions, beliefs, worded descriptions, names, nouns, and false truths applied to it. So while reality is certain, even as it constantly changes, fiction is fixed in a temporary state of nothingness. Simulation is never the real, no matter how real it seems. This is one of the easiest foundations of natural law imaginable. And it is these weaknesses and logical fallacies of man's perceptions that are manipulated by the fictional church and state, and so used to enslave us all outside this conscious reality, separating us from the truth of our own source. A man without real land can only walk in false persona, legal status, on the artificially titled land, real estate, of another's property. This legal word real in legal fiction has nothing to do with what is actual or real of God's creation. Note here that this word creation should also be read throughout this work as an indisputable or self-evident concept, as the superlative, highest, verb, as the continuing or eternal action and nature of the ever-changing permanence of the universe. This real estate is just words on paper, a false title, a numbered address point upon the grid of a legal matrix used for service of process to the agents of fictional persons. A lie given legal status is therefore a confirmed and ratified legal truth. And the only way that a man can walk without touching his source is to acknowledge in his mind through legal contract that all of the true, self-evident land, terra, as the reality of the creation of God, is instead and legally in truth usurped and replaced by the legal paper creation under legally, fictionally, appointed titles of the legal gods of those nations. Quote, "This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and ye shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. If ye be led of the Spirit, ye are not under the law. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, patience, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law." End quote. Galatians 5, verse 16, 18, and 22 through 23, King James Bible. Quote, "He is the rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are judgment, a God of truth and without iniquity. Just and right is he." End quote. Deuteronomy 32, verse 4, King James Bible. Quote, "Now therefore fear the Lord, and serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the flood, and in Egypt, and serve ye the Lord." End quote. Joshua chapter 24, verse 14. King James Bible. "And the truth shall make you free." Honestly, how many have quoted this statement and yet have never known it to be plagiarized from Scripture? And how many still could have imagined that to be set free by living only in self-evident truth without artifice and false beliefs in the legitimacy and authorities of man's fiction and laws is, for all intents and purposes, the whole law, word of God? How many then understand that the only defense, truth, against their great and powerful legal system of lies is that which against there is and can be no law, as love, charity, goodness, gentleness, peace? To a legal problem, there is no real solution. Fiction can never be solved or defeated with more lies from that fiction. It is a closed-loop system, as all lies are, which can only be defeated by the unblemished truth. One either is or is not acting as a real man. One is either acting in surety of a person, or one is not. One either uses the name, number, and mark of a beast of burden, or one does not. One either quits lying, or one remains bound by the relentless tentacles of that lie. No amount of legal paperwork will fix the problem, for the problem is the words of fiction within that legal paperwork. The person is built upon those words of legal paperwork. The only truth is that a legal person cannot operate itself, any more than a cartoon may appear without a magic screen. We must make this choice, each of us, to either empower or extinguish the life force and energy that powers the lie. Without me, without the I am, the person of Clint Richardson is dead. To be vulgar and borrow a familiar phrase from so many false, institutionalized corporate Christians, living in truth at all times is quite simply what Jesus would do. For Christ's only defense was, at all times, the use of pure truth, and only the enemies of pure truth were offended by its delivery, as the scribes and Pharisees and money changers and priests, the words of it stinging like the most ferocious, strongest predator imaginable. As with the story of Christ, the only way to defeat the truth is to imaginarily destroy it, either with strong hands or more aptly with stronger words. And so, as the Bible instructs, we should not attempt to justify our sins, our crimes against nature and its law, by claiming they are legal or lawful. Spirituality and creation lives nowhere under man's law. To walk spiritually is to walk against man's false law and false creations, for no law can touch the spiritually living man. Pure charity, as we have discussed, is an act of pure spirit. And against the spirit there is no legal law. It is only the fictional personification of legalized charity, including all corporations calling themselves as religions and churches, that the law of man may infect such spiritual gifts. Intent is everything, and intent to receive some profit or gain by one's act of giving is the gateway sin. For to be sure of receipt, one must obtain insurance. Insurance may only be applied to the legal surname or title of a fictional persona. Only in the Christian or first source, private name, may man cause the purity of love and charity to be fulfilled. All else is of mammon, and mammon is administered by false gods and tyrants. Now, as stated at the beginning of this work, the truth is an equal opportunity offender. And therefore, so might this work be to those lying continuously to themselves. And since we know now that man's religions are all false, and that following God's law religiously is to live in truth, we must also examine those groups and organizations that have developed mostly or solely in opposition to organized corporate religion. We must uncover their crimes and artifices against man, remembering that because anyone is driven to hate the church and denominated religions, the side effect is most often a hatred, ignorance, of the Bible and other scriptural-based knowledge. Atheism, being the non-belief in the existence of God, need not even be discussed here further than this very fallacious, mixed-up definition. For as we shall see, the word Jehovah, God, as transliterated from the Bible, is the very definition of existence itself. To not believe in, love, God, is to not believe in, love, existence, which resultantly is not to believe in, love, one's own place in that existence. As it is based almost exclusively on the mistranslation of the word God, in never defining the word and its intention, this atheistic belief system deserves no more attention here. It is just silly that anyone living and breathing with the ability to reason would doubt the existence of existence, God. Almost as silly as a Christian can be made to believe by man's false religions and entertainments that God is somehow the form of a man in the sky sitting on a cloud. God's nature is simply not and never has been defined this way in the Bible. There are no gates made of pearls in the Bible, except that the word pearl, margaritas, is a metaphor for the sacred gospel knowledge as pearls of wisdom. There is no actual cloud. Only the metaphoric meaning of that word cloud, anan, carrying the meaning of to veil or cover. These and other countless examples are why the undeniable, self-evident, self-existent truth of what Jehovah, God, is, as life and all things in existence and being, verb, can be arrogantly dismissed by the illiterate man. Of course, I know of no self-proclaimed atheist that does not believe in love, reality, in existence, in nature, and especially in his or herself. This is just a public-minded misunderstanding of the meaning of the word God, Jehovah, and a stubborn, socially promoted refusal to learn. It's a modern, vulgar, popular opinion, but it is also steeped in the mysticism of Kabbalah. Quote, "The true name of Satan, the Kabbalists say, is that of Yahweh reversed. For Satan is not a black god, but the negation of God. The devil is the personification of atheism or idolatry. For the initiates, this is not a person, but a force, created for good, which may serve for evil. It is the instrument of liberty for free will." End quote. Albert Pike, from Morals and Dogma, page 102. Quote, "May the force be with you." End quote. Line from Star Wars, a proverb spoken universally by Jedi on both the light and dark side. As Christ is the personification of God's light and word, law, so too is the devil indicative of the personification of Lucifer's false light and lawlessness, anarchy against Jehovah, the negation of foundation and grounding in nature, as the improper use of that spiritual gift of free will. The masters of knowledge must eventually choose their path into the light or dark side, while all the public-minded multitude succumbs to the false liberty of the false political freedom and commerce of the nations. And you thought it was just science fiction. Hollywood is the main foundation of the dispensation of the darkest of magic and sigils of the dark side. And it is Hollywood that delivers to us the false seers and evangelists, the preachers on television that love money more than the truth and life itself. Dispensation. Noun. Latin. See dispense. 1. Distribution. The act of dealing out to different persons or places, as the dispensation of water indifferently to all parts of the earth. 2. The dealing of God to his creatures. The distribution of good and evil, natural or moral, in the divine government. Neither are God's methods or intentions different in his dispensations to each private man. 3. The granting of a license, or the license itself, to do what is forbidden by laws or canons, to omit something which is commanded, that is, the dispensing with law or a canon, or the exemption of a particular person from the obligation to comply with its injunctions. The Pope has power to dispense with the canons of the Church, but has no right to grant dispensations to the injury of a third person. 4. That which is dispensed or bestowed, a system of principles and rights enjoined, as the Mosaic dispensation, the Gospel dispensation, including the former Levitical laws and rites, the latter the scheme of redemption by Christ. Webster's 1828. To he that seeks truth, and thus for he who finally arrives at the right question, it is not that Jehovah exists, it is that Jehovah is a word that means the entirety of all existence as the oneness of God, monotheism. Without Jehovah, without existence, no men would exist to contemplate such darkness of oblivion and negation, and therefore we'd have no one left that exists to label themselves as an atheist or a Christian. And so we find that the self-proclaimed atheist is merely another non sequitur, a victim of church and state marked by the flattering title of a fool, performed through a purposefully induced public-minded ignorance of words through false education and intentional obfuscation of the scriptural teachings. And all this because one little but absolutely foundational word remains undefined to the mind. To argue and debate over a word that has not been defined to have a known foundational, principal, meaning is the epitome of human sophistry, It leads, of course, to a superficial philosophy, to a preponderance of the force and thus law of life without attribution to a foundational source. It is the lowest form of logic without grammar. Sophistry is generally the foundation behind the use and respect of most, or perhaps even all, flattering titles, especially those of the arts. Quote, true religion and true philosophy must ultimately arrive at the same principle. End quote. Webster's 1828 Dictionary, from the definition of philosophy. Webster's 1828.
End of Chapter 1, Part 5.